views and opinions expressed on the following podcast are those of the persons appearing on the program and not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. Welcome to another edition of Club ADHD, the podcast. I'm your cordial and ADHD host, Russ LeBlanc. Welcome, welcome. Yes, did I say welcome? Of course, this is presented by our friends at CADAC. That's the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada. CADDAC.ca. Put it in your browser and you'll get to their website. And you will not regret it, especially if you want to know more about ADHD. If you want to know how you can create more awareness when it comes to the real truth about ADHD. And it's also a great place to find out that you're not alone, which is exactly what this place is all about too. Club ADHD. We have this here podcast. We have the Facebook page and the Twitter account. Visit clubadhd.ca for all the links. So how are you these days? I know the last podcast I told you about the passing of my mother, and she lived with us. It's going to be a big hole in our lives. And unfortunately, about a week and a half later, our nephew passed. He was in his 30s, young family, suffered from cancer. And he was in a lot of pain. So I guess if you look at the positive, he's no longer in pain. I guess. But his family is left and they are in pain. And I'm in pain too. He was a nice guy. And it just highlights that, you know, our lives are filled with obstacles. Yes, we talk about our ADHD obstacles. They are real. But they won't go away. We can't make people live forever. We can't just say, go away, ADHD. No, it's with us. So we deal with it. And sometimes dealing with it isn't exactly pleasurable. But if we want to continue on, and we must, we have to find ways when it comes to dealing. It doesn't mean that we have to forget those who have passed. It doesn't mean that we have to ignore the fact that we have ADHD. But it is a part of us, as is the case with our loved ones on Earth and those who have passed. So, you know, you just carry on. And am I in a great state of mind these days? Well, I'll be truthful. No, not really. I can paste a smile on my face. And we have a great interview coming up. And, you know, I made it through that. Did another interview after that. Actually laughed a bit. And that's a good one, too. That'll come in a few days' time. So that's why I've fallen even a bit more behind when it comes to the podcasts. But I'm bound and determined to really stockpile things, so we'll upload this one. The one you're listening to has been uploaded, and we'll have a new one if you're listening on the same day as this is being uploaded, or on the next day. We'll have another brand new podcast in a few days' time. So there we have it. That's my little soapbox thing, you know, ADHD when it comes to dealing with troubles. Can it help hurt? I don't know. I'm a little torn behind that because sometimes we can remove ourselves from that pain for a bit thanks to our ADHD because we might be focusing on something else, maybe hyper-focusing on something else, although it's tough to hyper-focus. But, you know, as I said, you just carry on. That's it. And if you're going through a tough patch in your life, maybe if a loved one has passed, you know, I empathize. And the thing is, it's like our ADHD. When you mention this to other people, or other people find out that, you know, you lost some people in your lives, it's not that we're looking for sympathy. But we find out that we're not alone. Usually it sparks other people to say, yep, I lost my mother or my husband or wife not too long ago, and I can relate to what you're going through. It doesn't make it any easier. And it's the same thing when you're dealing with ADHD. If you're dealing with some of the troubling aspects of ADHD. And that's what this Club ADHD is all about. We're banding together in a group to say that, you know, we're not alone. We're not unique. We are not islands when it comes to feeling certain ways. And we can help each other by making sure that we convey to those people who might feel alone that they aren't alone and that we can possibly help them because we've lived what they're going through. Maybe somebody just got diagnosed with ADHD and they're upset about it. I don't know, but we have a wealth of information because living it means that, hey, we've got the info. So what am I trying to say? I'm rambling on, but yet we're here for each other, and that's what it's all about. That's why Club ADHD was created, for adults with ADHD. And we've got a good interview coming up, somebody who has been on the podcast before, and he's got some valuable information that he wants to convey to all of us that could possibly make our lives a bit easier. Let's check it out in the interview portion of our podcast. Up next, we have a man who is no stranger to the podcast. He's been a guest on it before in the interview portion of the podcast, and he's doing the same thing right now. I thought, let's get him back. Matter of fact, I'd like to get him back on a regular basis. His name is Jason Froetz, and you could say that Jason is a helper. Yes, he helps people with ADHD. You could also say he's a performance coach. His specialty is helping adults with ADHD, helping to manage their lives and their challenges. And it just doesn't stop with ADHD. No, Jason can help with the baggage that comes along, that can come along with ADHD. For instance, maybe someone suffering from depression or anxiety, afraid to get out there. Perhaps it's OCD, perhaps even Tourette's. Jason has helped people in that position. And the great thing about Jason is he can relate to a lot of the ADHD, should I call them struggles? Yeah, it's safe to call them struggles, because he himself has ADHD, but he hasn't let that stop him. He's well-educated. Yes, he's hit some roadblocks thanks to his ADHD, but he figured a way on how to get around that. And with that life experience, plus with his scholastic knowledge, he's become a real asset. Now, he's based in the Toronto area, but thanks to the internet, he helps people from all over the place. You know, with the internet, you can reach just about anyone in the world. All they need is an internet feed, or, you know, access to the internet, and there you have it. You can talk to Jason. Maybe he can help you. Matter of fact, I know he'll help you, because that's what this interview is going to be all about. The topic of discussion is how to get going when it comes to a task. Yes, normal people can put off tasks. Normal, whatever that is, but you know what I mean. But we ADHDers, it becomes even more challenging. We think that, oh, it's going to be too painful. Put it off, put it off, put it off, put it off. And then all of a sudden it just makes it very painful. But Jason has figured out ways and how to get going when it comes to getting going and starting those tasks, and maybe even, heaven forbid, completing the tasks. But to me, the real important part is, how do we get off the mark? How do we get going? So that's what we're going to talk to Jason about right now. Jason Froetz of Club ADHD, the podcast. Jason, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Russ. Happy to be here.
And in case you're listening and you're not familiar with Jason, well, he's been on the podcast before, and he has ADHD, and he's also a coach, which is kind of cool. You know, you get somebody who knows what it's all about, who's helping you. I mean, it's one thing to have someone from the outside looking in, but you're looking in from in.
This is true. Go ahead, Russ.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about, you know, some of the things that you faced that really enhanced your coaching abilities, especially when it comes to getting things done. A lot of people struggle with it. I struggle with it, and I'm not alone, and I'm sure at times you do too, but here you have to coach people who are going through that struggle. I mean, how do you approach that?
You know, you've touched on a huge area, and I didn't realize, you know, how much it affected, all, you know, our tribe. And until I really got into it with clients, you know, clients would come to me. As you may know, I work with a lot of college university students, making that transition from high school to college. And then, you know, task management is a huge area for them, because all of a sudden they have so many more things they need to do. You know, mom and dad aren't around to help them with, certain domestic tasks and, you know, homework, all that stuff. But I also work with some executives, and the executives come to me with some, you know, challenges to getting started or following through or completing tasks that you never would have expected with like a CEO, you know, but they struggle, those with ADHD, they struggle just like we do, often in silence, you know? And so, I think, you know, to answer your question, I think, because I've been asked of my clients, you know, how do I do X or how do I do Y? I've had to kind of really narrow my focus into what makes task management work for an ADHDer. I've kind of divided task management up into a bunch of different areas. And then, you know, I'll often propose solutions, you know, things that work for me, things that work with clients I've worked with that have shared with me, you know, what works with them. So I become a bit of a hub, you know, and sharing that knowledge. I guess in short, I do have a number of, you know, a little toolbox, if you will, of solutions to help with things like task initiation or getting started, or, you know, follow through and be consistent with follow through, or even getting things done proactively, you know, versus, on time or late.
Yeah. I'm thinking about, you know, how to get started when it comes to getting started. I mean, it's like a mirror type of effect.
Yeah. Actually, getting started is probably the most challenging that I've experienced with my clients. You know, I would say, you know, 9 times out of 10, that comes up in a conversation about task management. And often it's because, you know, when through an ADHDer's eyes, at least through my own experience, you know, when we look at something that needs to be done, whether it be a small task or even a project, we look at it often differently than the average person. Isn't that true, Russ? We'll look at something that might look simple to someone else, and they say, why don't you just go and do it? You know, I had this boss that used to come to me and say, Jason, just Nike it, you know, just do it.
Easier said than done.
Yeah. And I remember sitting at my desk one time saying, what the heck? Why can't I actually get started on this task? Like, this is all I have to do is pick up the phone and call this person and just, you know, set up a venue. I had to arrange an event for my boss. And it was so difficult to do. And so what I learned, though, was that, you know, I had to kind of deconstruct what that task was and what was really behind it for me. And I found that there was a lot of clues, you know, about the way I thought about or perceived the task to be that made it more difficult for me to complete. So, so things like, you know, often if a task is opaque, you know, it's not clear as to, well, what am I supposed to do here? You know, what are the steps for me to take here? If that's not clear, that can often be a challenge for, a lot of us. The other is if it's too big, if it looks like a mountain, and again, it might not look like a mountain to somebody else, but to us, it might be a mountain.
Sure.
So, you know, understanding how do I perceive that? Do I perceive that as a mountain? Yeah, I do. Okay. So I need to acknowledge that. And then I need to kind of break this down somehow so that it's not so big. And then the third thing I find, Russ, is that with getting started, it's often the, not being able to see the light at the end of the tunnel before we start. So if that's not there, if I can't see the end of this task, you know, before I start, maybe it's just because we're so used to getting, you know, kind of stuck in quicksand or, you know, not often following through. we get scared of it, and we might avoid it because it's like, this could be just the, you know, end to this task. So, you know, and if there isn't a light at the end of the tunnel, how do we create like maybe a milestone so that, you know we can see the next lily pad to hop to? And that often can make it a lot easier.
What about the misconceptions that we often have, thinking that, oh, it's going to be totally terrible. It's going to be, I can't do it. And then we find out that it's not. How do we get over that?
That's so true. That's so true. I mean, again, you know, I call it the, like the hot stove syndrome. I was recently talking to one of my executive clients the other day about it. And, you know, he had this important meeting with his boss, and he was very apprehensive about it. And he's like, you know, this is going to be horrible. I'm going to get reprimanded for making the mistakes that he was telling me about. And from my perspective, I had worked in the same industry that he had, and I didn't really see it the same way that he did. And I felt that he was maybe, you know, catastrophizing it a little bit. But still, I really wanted to see it through his eyes. So we explored that. And what was interesting was that he had had previous experiences, where he had kind of touched the hot stove, where he'd been reprimanded for those kind of, those similar things.
Oh.
And so, yeah, so, you know, they kind of roused up and created, they kind of haunted him. So when he ever got up to a situation where he had to talk to a boss about something, then, you know, of course there's that hot stove and he would avoid it. So, you know, he was supposed to do a bunch of things for the boss and wasn't doing them. And it was really, it wasn't apparent as to why he was avoiding it, but we got into it and he said, geez, you know what? I think it's because I've had these past, you know, real negative experiences, but maybe I don't need to view it that way anymore because I've grown so much since then.
Yeah.
You know,
kind of a cognitive thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they, yeah. Cognitive therapy, I mean, it teaches you that, you know, it's not as bad as what you might think. And, but again, you know, it's just the way our brain works, I guess.
You know, I think we sometimes have a bit of a hair trigger. Like it, maybe it's not, you know, kind of, you know, previous traumatic experiences. Sometimes it's just, like you said, I think it's maybe we have that predisposition, if you will,
yeah,
to kind of, you know, look at things in a critical light. I'm not sure, but in my experience with clients, it's often that, you know, they've been burned before, you know, because we have dropped the ball.
Sure.
In certain situations, you know, and certainly, you know, as you know, I think, Russ, you know, the ADHD can often come with anxiety, you know, coexisting.
Yeah.
With anxiety, and so there's that anxiety spiral that doesn't help, you know. When we get into a task and it's like, okay, I'm scared. I'm not sure what to do here. And then the anxiety can kind of, you know, take hold and we get into a little bit of a spiral dive, right? And then that can cause avoidance and procrastination and those things too, I think.
So how do we, one, get going? And two, you mentioned about, you know, seeing a bit of light somewhere to get you going. How do we implement or instill that into the task?
You know, I think it depends on, of course, what the task is and what the situation is. But in general, I think that, I call it starting an unfriendly task. You know, it's not necessarily, you know, something we're comfortable with. Maybe it's a task that we've been avoiding for some time. You know, maybe it's doing taxes. I don't like doing taxes.
Well,
I don't know anybody.
That's the common thread. That's the first thing I ask when I go to a convention, you know, dealing with ADHD or a cadet conference. I ask people, okay, show of hands, how many people are behind on their taxes? And just about everybody raised their hands.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's why, you know, one of the reasons I married an accountant. I'm lucky. You know?
Very good. A round of applause.
Yeah. You know, it's that old adage, you know, do what you do best and delegate the rest.
Exactly.
You know?
So how do you get going? How do you... I guess, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword for you because you're living it and you've got to get going when it comes to teaching people to get going. But then again, it's always, I don't know if you find this, but when it comes to other people, giving advice and helping them comes easier than giving advice to oneself.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. often the shoemaker's shoes, right?
Yeah.
That syndrome.
Yeah. The carpenter usually has the worst house.
Yeah. 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 Well, it's funny because for me, you know, in a way, being an ADHD coach and dealing with these issues, it keeps me honest. You know, it keeps me in the sense that if I'm, you know, suggesting solutions to my clients, I have to remind myself, I better darn well use them myself.
Sure.
You know, I better try them and make sure they work for me. And if they don't, find something else that does. So yeah, I think, you know, my task management over the years has gotten so much better. Like I can't even compare to when I, 15 years ago, I would avoid certain things like the plague. A lot of tasks would be kind of left incomplete. And that can weigh on you, you know. I don't need to tell anybody who's listening what it feels like to have a laundry list of unfinished projects or tasks that it's like, you know, what's wrong with me? You know, why can't I finish these things? It's not a good feeling, you know?
Yeah.
But when we talk about, you know, to the other end of the spectrum of, you know, getting started on tasks, there are things that I do consistently now that really help me get through it, you know, especially the most difficult, as I call them, unfriendly tasks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first thing is really, you know, awareness is kind of like, you know, being aware of what's actually happening here, you know? So what's the task at hand? And then kind of dissecting the task, and I call it, or disarming the task, you know, so removing the wrapper, if you will, of, okay, this task, how do I feel when I look at it? You know, it's like, you know, I had this one student I worked with, who had been sitting on an outline for an essay that was due. And I think the outline was worth something like 20% of the essay. And his mom has been, you know, was on him saying, hey, you know, we've had 2 weeks to do this. Why haven't you started? And he couldn't answer it. He said, I don't know. I'm overwhelmed by this. So, he sat in my office and I asked him what he had to do. And he said, I've got this outline I've got to do. I said, okay, well, can we work on it together? He said, sure. So I grabbed my timer, this little timer that I use, a little LED timer, big light on the top. And I said, all right, you've got 3 minutes to start the task and actually, you know, give me the outline in 3 minutes if you would. He said, I can't do that. I've never done that before. And I said, well, you know what? Let's give it a shot. You know, there's no risk in trying, right? Make a mess of it. That's okay. It's just me.
Yeah.
He said, all right, sure. So I gave him a pen and paper and off he went. And, you know, he saw the timer going and within 3 minutes, Russ, he got his outline done. It was messy. It
really?
Was all over the place. Great. Yeah. And he said, well, this is a mess. He said, how am I going to organize this? I said, it's okay. You got a minute to do it. I'll give you another minute. So I gave him 4 minutes in total. And I gave him a new page to write on and he organized it. 4 minutes, because he had it all in his head, Russ. It was all there. It wasn't like it wasn't there, you know? And so I said, how do you feel now? He put the pen down. He looked at me. And I think he almost cried. Like he really wanted to just, he was so emotive. He said, I didn't know I could do that. I said, well, now you do. And he's like, wow, what just happened? And so what happened was, I know that, you know, a lot of ADHDers, we tend to rise to the occasion at the last minute. In a way, we use stress,
right,
or a deadline to kind of create focus, right? And so I try to leverage that with my students, right? And so I artificially create a time frame, a very short, bite-sized time frame to get something done. And that often stimulates, you know, the best part of our ADD, right?
Right. You're giving them a goal or a quick, you got to, yeah, that makes sense.
What
about the importance of, as you were saying this, I know you're in the room with that person. I find that we can be so critical of our own selves that we look for approval outside of our own body from other people. Now, if we're alone and we're doing something and okay, we know the task and we set forth and we accomplish a bite-sized bit of it, I'm not sure if I'm, no, I know I'm not alone in thinking this way, that it's not good enough for us. But if somebody comes in and said, hey, that's great, you're going fine, then all of a sudden our whole attitude can change. Do you find that is one of the stumbling blocks?
Yeah, I do. In fact, that's probably the most difficult stumbling block, you know, I've ever encountered with clients is what you've identified. It's that kind of third party accountability seems to work really well. But when we're left to our own devices to, you know, to be self accountable, you know, we can ignore it.
Yeah.
You know, or, yeah, you know, it's very, very true. You know, and that is a tough thing because, like, self-imposed deadlines, you know, for getting something done, don't always work with an ADDer for the reasons you mentioned, right? And so that's often my toughest challenge is because, you know, one has, there are other things you can do, I think, to improve that. But at the end of the day, you know, kind of third-party accountability works very well. But we don't always have that.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you know, that transition from high school to university or college, it's like, wait a sec, there isn't really as much, you know, third party accountability there. There's no teacher chasing you, no mom and dad chasing you to get your homework done. So that's often where a lot of, students will drop, you know? So how do you know, you're probably wondering, you know, so how does one deal with that? And I think that the, you know, again, these other ways to triage, if you will, a task can be helpful. And so so in absence of having somebody kind of set a timer with you and sit in the room with you to get something done, you know, there are some other things that I think one can do to get started on their own. And that's going back to maybe, you know, what I call, again, disarming of the task or removing the wrapper of what's in front of you. And the first thing can be really, you know, kind of like CBT, you know, asking more helpful questions at the beginning can really change our direction with respect to how we perceive the task.
Uh-huh.
That can help. So things like, asking more helpful questions could be asking more revealing questions. You know, like, well, what is this task really asking of me? You know, is this task really that big? You know, so kind of critical questions, you know, challenging, you know, the task and your own perception of it. What is specifically overwhelming about it for me?
Right.
You know, those kind of things. You know, am I catastrophizing here? And then you can also ask, you know, cropping questions, which are, you know, how do I make this task smaller, shorter? How can I chunk it out, right? Which is a pretty common technique in dealing with, you know, task management with ADHD. Is there a way I could redefine this in simpler terms? And, you know, I was working with a teacher who is in training or in training to be a teacher in New Zealand a little while ago. And, you know, really, really talented. She's going to be a great teacher. But the way they were teaching her, you know, the instructions for a project, for example, she was working on were so verbose, Russ. You know, I had trouble deciphering what they really wanted her to do in an assignment. She would show me.
Really?
Yeah. And she'd almost be in tears. It's like, I've got to get this done. And I don't even know what they're asking me. I'm too shy and too afraid to ask the teacher a third time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what, you know, please re-explain this to me. So, you know, I asked her cropping questions, you know, I said, how can we get rid of the garbage? Let's take out the garbage. And so what we did is we went it was a Google Drive document, like a Word document. And I had her, cross out, you know, with the, you know, the cross out, I don't know what it's called, like a font that crosses out the words. And we just removed the, and, you know, the ambiguous words and the unhelpful words and kind of like the, you know, the arrogant words, if you will. You know, there's a lot of kind of nomenclature in academia that doesn't necessarily need to be there.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. Look at me. I'm so bright. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of, you know what I mean? It's like, there's that kind of egocentric, you know,
yeah.
verbiage that's there. You know, it's not helpful, you know,
no,
it's
no.
not helpful to the student. So let's take out the garbage and then, you know, redefine what's being asked. And the moment we did that, I remember we did on one project, on one assignment, Russ, and I think it was like just over a page long. We reduced it down to about three sentences. And then she looked at it and she's like, oh my gosh, now I know what I'm supposed to do. This is all I'm supposed to do? I said, well, what do you think? I think that's it. I don't think I'm missing anything. And off she went.
Wow.
She ended up doing fantastic on it.
Great.
But you see, it was her perception and her own self-doubt, because she was intimidated by the languaging and she was intimidated by all this, you know, verbiage. And how do I clean this up? Like, where do I even start? So, you know, cropping it down, taking out the garbage can be really, really helpful.
It sounds like she was intimidated by that other person's issues.
Well said. Wow. Yeah. 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 You know, if there's one thing, you know, we can do as ADHDers, it's kind of like clearing out the clutter,
yeah,
like in our brain. If separating someone else's issues or someone else's unhelpful right. languaging from our own, you know, we have our own stuff enough to deal with, right?
Yeah.
If we can clean up, you know, what else is out there, the extraneous information, it just makes whatever it is that we have to do that much easier to tackle.
It's kind of funny. It's leading me into something that just popped into my mind here as far as tasks. Sometimes we have to do a task. I'll give you an example. My neighbor has the world's best lawn. Now, it's not a very big lawn when you analyze it, but no, all I'm thinking is, wow, it's fantastic. And he's a friend of mine, and I look at my lawn, and no matter how I try, there's weeds around and whatever. And for the longest time, I poured money into it, effort, whatever, and it just didn't come out the same way as his lawn. But in the grand scheme of things, who was I trying to impress? Was that lawn looking as great as the neighbor's going to enhance my life? I don't spend a lot of time on my lawn as far as living on my lawn as much as perhaps maybe he does. But I was trying to create a task to please someone else, and my own feelings just were, you know, left aside, whereas I should have said, well, I'll mow the lawn, I'll do whatever, but, you know, if they don't like my lawn, it's up, you know, to them to deal with it. If it's somewhat presentable, then it should be okay. Do you find that that's usually a situation where we're trying to please others in our tasks, where really it doesn't mean a hill of beans to us?
I was going to start off by saying that, you know, your lawn, I think is very similar to my lawn too. I've tried everything. I've tried everything to get grass to grow in the front. And it doesn't help to have a border collie, you know, puppy. yeah, I think that's true. I think maybe also because of the hot stove syndrome, you know, that we,
yeah.
you know, we're often trying to, we're trying to fit in, you know.
Yeah.
Know, sometimes,
yeah.
Isn't it true that we feel like outsiders often in our lives as ADHDers?
Yeah, that's why I like, you know, groups like this and going to CADAC conferences, because, you know, there's safety in numbers, and not that we should be so cloistered in just living in our own bubble, but we should continually get together to know that, hey, we're not unique to the point that there are other people like us. And if other people view us a certain way, well, you know, that's their problem if it's a negative. And I know it's hard to say that, hard to actually, it's easy to say that, but hard to live it. But my wife, it was funny when I mentioned something. My wife wanted to get a push mower for our backyard, because sometimes my physical situation that I have just sometimes flares up and I can't mow the lawn as good and whatever. So she wanted to help out. And the neighbor's lawn came up, and she said, you know, look at his lawn. It's about, I don't know, it's about a sixth of what our lawn is as far as space. A lot easier to keep that in track than ours. So maybe you're looking at it wrong. You know, you're taking care of an acre as opposed to, you know, 100 square feet. A lot easier to take care of 100 square feet.
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting observation your wife made, you know, is how are you looking at it?
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Yeah, yeah. I looked at it. Yeah, it is small. Yeah, yeah, I could probably handle that maybe. But then again, here's, in talking with my neighbor and knowing him, he enjoys sitting on his lawn pulling crabgrass one at a time. And to me, that's a little boring. And, you know, different strokes, different folks. But I know that if he was asked to do a commercial or a recording, whatever, he couldn't do what I did or do. But we don't right. think that way.
Yeah. No, that absolutely. I think we think completely differently. And it's, you know, it's interesting is, I mean, it's one thing, to deal with tasks and our perception of how we're doing, you know, in a personal way. But when it comes to like, you know, at being at school or at work, you know, there, we are judged, you know, where, you know, this assignment has to be done a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, and if we haven't been, if we don't have a great track record at, you know, completing things on time, let's say, you know, or the quality is missing, then, you know, we're going to feel maybe more apprehensive about getting those things done. I think that, I often share this with the, you know, with my clients is one thing maybe to keep in mind is to, there's two worlds in a way, you know, there's two ways of thinking, maybe two ways of getting things done. And I'm sure there's more than that, you know, but for 80 years, we view things in our own way. And then the rest of the world maybe has, you know, let's say at work, you know, or at school, there's certain criteria, certain requirements that have to be met. And so I call it like kind of, you know, we have to satisfy the external world. And if we're at work, we got to satisfy
right.
what is asked of us there first, but we can't ignore also what our needs are after, you know? Yeah.
So, you know, so is it safe to say that in some instances, when it comes to tasks, it doesn't have to be perfect, just functional?
I mean, perfectionism, sure. Perfectionism can also be a real challenge because, you know, we're often, you know, high energy people. You know,
yeah.
We're tenacious as heck. We're very ambitious often and unrelenting and also very, very unforgiving, you know, with ourselves. Perfectionism, I see it all the time in my practice. And perfectionism, while that can be helpful in some situation, it's often not very helpful in a lot of others because it can also grow that molehill into the mountain yeah. that we're perceiving. And,
right.
So actually one of the things I do, you know, with clients, Russ, is, it's really kind of reframing things. And so that's why I said to that one student, you know, when he had 3 minutes to write the outline, I said, please make a mess out of it. I really want you to make a mess out
so
of it.
So it was okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of give yourself permission, you know, in that situation, I gave him permission. You know, to not that he needed my permission, but in that situation, he, you know, he was looking for guidance.
Yeah, so. He did need it, I guess. You have bottom line. It helped him.
Yeah. And once he had that permission to kind of make mistakes and not have to be perfect right away or at all, all of a sudden, you know, it's like the floodgates opened and he could flow. And so that's a big one you bring up is perfectionism and how that can be very unhelpful for an 80-year. So one of the first things we can do too is to you know, tell ourselves, remind ourselves that, you know, it's okay to make a mistake, but go to the extreme, you know, because we're often on the other end of the spectrum yeah. when it comes to perfectionism. Say, make a mess out of it. It's okay. Make a mess out of it. Really, what's going to happen if we make a mess out of it? No one's going to see version one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They call it a draft. But you mentioned mess, and I know there are people listening right now saying, yeah, mess. I'm surrounded by a mess. How can I, you know, get organized? And I know that's a very common situation. Hands up. I've got my hand up to try to keep things, well, as they say, tidy. But how do we overcome that mess or to get it somewhat workable? Physical mess, you know, you're in an office and it's messy and you can't find things. And what would you say, what would be the first step to get things going?
That's a great question. Because mess, you know, I used to deal with a lot of messes personally too, you know, a lot of, you know, a messy room and a messy desk and all that. One thing that it's a requirement now for me, just, you know, personally, you know, my bedroom and my desk is it's got to be clean. I've realized that I function so much better with clarity. So if I'm unsure, for example, of what I need to do in a day, it's often because my desk is not as clean as it needs to be. And so that's usually the first step is to clean my desk. So if something's a mess, let's say, you know, a student's room is messy or, maybe an executive's desk is a mess, files all over the place, pens and pencils everywhere. You know, what's the first step? I would say the first step is really to, for me at least, and for many of my clients is to, kind of bookend the task. You know, if the goal is to clean up the mess, you know, what does clean up mean to you?
Right.
Does clean up like nothing on the desk? You know, what's the picture? We're often very visual creatures. How do I envision this desk to look like? Like, what would be fantastic? And what would be not a mess? And then start with that. And then with that in mind, I actually set a timer. It sounds very, very, granular here. But I set a 15-minute timer because I know myself that if I find a photo or I find something to work on, maybe an email pops up, Russ.
Right, exactly. Phone, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we all know what.
Yeah, the squirrel. Yeah, okay. Yep.
The squirrel runs, you know, across the desk and off I go and I don't get my desk clean. And then the rest of the day is completely unproductive because I didn't even finish cleaning my desk, which is what I needed to kind of start off my productive day. So I'll set a timer and the timer needs to be something like for me, it needs to be something that's not necessarily on my phone. Mm-hmm. It could be an egg timer. There's some I can recommend. But it's got to be not on your computer, ideally. For me, it's a standalone, like I said, a little LED timer. I set it for 15 minutes. It glows green while I'm doing the task. And then it goes yellow when there's a few minutes left, and then red and beeps when my time's up. And so it's a bit of a game. And I will clean up that, you know, I will say I need to, you know, put my desk in a state of, you know, what I see as being clean in that 15 minutes. So that would be the first thing. And then how I do that, there's some steps there too. But the first step you asked, you know, what would that be? And I think it would be to have a vision of what you want and then set a limit on the time you're going to spend on it.
Now, with that vision, would it be a good idea to figure out what am I looking to accomplish? As you know, I'm looking for this place to be tidy. Okay, yeah, that's one thing. But what are you looking to accomplish? That you can find things easier or whatever? Is it fair to break it down that way?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you know, going back to the lawn analogy you gave, you know, why am I doing this? You know, what's behind me doing this?
Yeah.
Is it to impress my wife, you know, or my neighbor, you know, am I going to put my desk in a state that would be kind of socially acceptable? Or is it more important that it's functional for me?
Right. You
know? And that's a great question. Yeah. You know, like, why am I doing this? What's behind me doing this? How is cleaning my desk or getting rid of this mess going to help me? Sure.
Yeah. ADHD, it's the thing that always gives and sometimes takes, but yeah, you're right. You know, you got to figure out why you're doing it. And just break it down into small chunks, I guess. A lot of people say that. But here's the question. What happens if that timer goes off and you're not done, you're not finished? What do you do then?
Yeah, so that can happen, right? That's happened many times. For me to say that, the timer went off and I got it all done, nice and neat, you know, in that time. Would be not completely true. and because it, you know, life happens and sometimes we don't have time to, you know, maybe the desk is in a much, you know, worse state of affairs than it usually is. So it's going to take me more time. What I try to do is I usually, you know, let's say it would take me maybe say 30 minutes to clean the desk without a timer, which often wouldn't happen because it would not just not get clean. It would never really get clean. But let's just say if I took my time, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes would be the average amount of time. I deliberately set the time to a shorter time period.
Oh.
So that it kind of creates that sense of pressure, that gamification, if you will, yeah, of the task. Of course, you know, the risk is that I don't have enough time, you know, and so I get to the end, you know, of my time and the light's flashing red and I've got like a minute left to clean, which probably needs another 10 minutes. What do? I give myself, what I call two parachutes. You know, I've never gone skydiving, but, I don't know if I want
What? But, you're an ADHD person. You're supposed to like risk.
I know. Well, I'm a pilot too, and I it's hard to jump out of in my mind and
envision the crash. So,
yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't appeal to me. So, but I think but the analogy works for me. And that is apparently you have two parachutes when you jump. You know, so the first chute is the primary one, and then you know, heaven forbid if that doesn't work, at least you've got a second one.
Right.
But the second one, there ain't no chute. That's it.
Yeah.
Right. So putting a flexible limit on the task. So, cause if it's really strict, if it's really hard, like, okay, the timer, the light went off now. I'm out of time and I still have a messy desk. Well, there we go again. I didn't get it done.
Yeah.
And, you know, woe is me. You know, what do I do now? So I find that having the second chute, the second parachute that you give yourself could be a reasonable, like an extra 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sprint. And so, you know, so I'll give myself an extra 5 minutes is my second shoot. And, I move in that 5 minutes because I know I'm not going to give myself more time than that.
Right.
And that often works. So in a way, again, it's not perfect, right? It gives mm-hmm. us a chance to be imperfect, but it also gives us a chance to conform to a, you know, to honor a promise to ourselves that we're going to get this done in a certain period of time.
So allow yourself a snooze button, but don't snooze.
Yeah. It's more like a sprint button.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, we could go on forever talking about this. It's very interesting. And the last time you were on, I was saying, well, we got to get you on, maybe coaching me or whatever. And yeah, it's one of those things that fell beside the wayside. Bad me. But you're here now. And I want to get you back on here because there's so much I want to talk about. And I don't want to make sure that that we go on too long because people can zone out when they have ADHD. But the information you provided, I'm going to give you a round of applause. I often do to guests who earn it, and you've earned it. And the fact that you have ADHD and you're able to do all this is even more admirable. And please, if you're listening, saying, yeah, he can do it, but why can't I? Well, why can't you?
Thanks, Russ. Thanks for having me on again. And it's been a pleasure to be here. And listen, I hope some of the stuff that I've mentioned is helpful to those listening. You know, we're all part of the same tribe here. And that's the most rewarding thing for me is that if some of this can help even one person, then awesome. You know, it makes their lives that much better. And I don't know everything, you know, by any means. I'm still learning tons from you guys. My clients teach me a lot. Sure. I'm just more of a purveyor of information. So, you know, some of these are my solutions. Some of them are not. Some of them are yours. So I just hope they help.
And if somebody wants to get even more information, shameful plug time.
Yeah, my website is being built or, you know, refurbished right now, but you're certainly welcome to send me a note. You know what? I would love to hear from you. You can send a note to my email address is jason@animarecoaching.com. And that's spelled ANIMARE and then coaching.com. And just send me a note, you know, on your thoughts. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Jason, thanks again.
Thanks so much, Russ. Take care.
Hey, what did I tell you? There's some good information in there, and I hope that you can use it so that you can get going when it comes to starting and perhaps even completing tasks. Thanks again, Jason, for your time spent with us, and we look forward to talking with you again. It's Club ADHD, the podcast. Time to wind down. as we get ready to say so long. Well, actually, not we. It's me. I'm a one-man show. Yeah, I'll admit it. And if you'd like to send something along, a note or whatever, feel free to do so. All you have to do is visit clubadhd.ca and hit the email button right there. Or you can maybe comment on Twitter, clubadhd, or even the Facebook account. It's all there for us, adults with ADHD. And we are here thanks to the help from the Center for ADHD Awareness Canada, otherwise known as CADAC. And don't forget to visit their website and find out more information about their annual conference. And yeah, I'll be there. That's going to be held in Toronto this year in October. For full details, visit cadac.ca. Well, there you have it. Another edition of the podcast Under Our Belts. And you know something? I lost a bit of weight so I can actually see under my belt. Somewhat. Now, as per usual, I'm going to ask you to do something, a little favor for all of us. Wherever and whenever you can, be sure to shout it and shout it out loud and proud. ADHD is real. Bye for now.